Kia ora and welcome to the Kiwi Running Show presented by TempoFit. We hope you're having a great day. It's Hayden Sherman and myself, Hamish Meacham, guiding you through another show. Hayden, what's on the agenda for today?
Well, it's an exciting week of New Zealand running. I've got to say it's an historic week. So we've definitely got a lot of stuff to talk about with Rio. So very keen to get into that. So after that, we will talk about some local news that's been happening. Not a particularly busy weekend, but a nice little new ultra on the scene and some cross countries around the regions.
Some good old muddy cross country.
Yeah. We're in the middle of winter. And then we've got some international news. We've got an interview with the race organizer of the Wellington Urban Ultra.
Nice.
And then an interview with Angie, which I haven't quite done yet. So hopefully that goes well. So
Angie
Petty.
Yep.
And then we'll do a little bit of training talk at the end. So plenty to come.
Yep. So a very busy day, but we're going to kick it off with the national news, what's been happening locally. And as you mentioned, a bit of a quiet weekend, but some of the centre championships were coming up. And so for those who don't come from that kind of club background, generally within any region, there's lots and lots of clubs, could be as few as five or as many as 20 clubs in a region. And around this time of year, all of those clubs will come together and run their regional cross-country championships. And so this weekend, there were three, the Waikato Bay Plenty Champs, the Hawke's Bay Gisborne Champs, and the Manawatu Whanganui Champs. So we won't dwell too much on it, but the Waikato Bay Plenty Champs were quite exciting. Aaron Pulford taking the win from Harry Ewing. So Aaron will be one of the favourites lining up for the national cross-country championships here in Auckland on August the 7th. And then on the ladies' side, Nicola Mitchell taking the win from Sally Gibbs.
Nicole Mitchell.
Yeah. What did I say?
Nicola.
Oh, that's my cousin. Right. Yeah. Shout out to my cuz. Nicole Mitchell winning from Sally Gibbs. Sally Gibbs, of course, will be the hottest of hot favourites for the veteran women's race at the national cross country. But cool to see her stepping down and running the senior women's at a regional level.
I want to know the age gap between Nicole and Sally. That would be interesting.
It must be about 30 years. Yeah, it could be 30 years.
So
that's
Sally's
cool.
Doing so well. And the time was actually quite close, wasn't it?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So very cool. Moving to Hawke's Bay, Gisborne. So a couple of Napier Harriers runners, Lucas Duros, taking the win from Christian Day, and then on the women's side, Ruby Muir. So Ruby Muir might be a name that's familiar to a lot of people. She's a really well-known international level ultra distance runner. So she runs a lot of ultra trail races. She's won a couple of big races and is, essentially she's like basically at the professional level in ultra running. And her partner Christian Day finished second in this race. She won the women's race, and they've both signaled they're going to run the national cross country champs.
Wow, that's cool.
Yeah, really, so it's cool. Really cool. So it's a big step down from 100k to 12k, but I'm really interested. 10k for the ladies, yes. Yeah. But I'm interested to see how they mix it up. So
yeah,
it'll be really exciting.
It's cool because those two worlds sort of operate in two different hemispheres, really.
Yeah.
Like the ultra trail world and then the cross country more athletics world.
Yeah.
But they do have this middle ground of kind of 10k cross country, and especially if it's a little bit hillier, where they can mix it up with each other.
I'm gonna shamelessly drop in a personal story. So
yeah,
I was lucky enough when I was really young. I think I was like 18. I trained with a guy, Jerry Lawson, who was an American runner. And so he briefly held one of the American records for the marathon. He ran 209.35 at Chicago. And so I got to do some training with him and Callum Harland, who was another Waikato guy, training around. And Jerry came over for the New Zealand track season and was trying to run a sub-4-minute mile. And he did it. He ran about a 4:06 or something. But, he did all the speed work and was smashing out all these 1,500 and 800-meter races. And it was cool. I got to train with him. And then he went back to the States and got off the plane and ran his fastest ever half marathon and ran like a 1:01.22.
Wow.
So really speedy for a half marathon. Totally. And the quote afterwards was saying, having tried to run a sub-4-minute mile, I come out and run this half marathon, it feels like jogging. And so I wonder if it'll be the same for Ruby Muir and Christian Day. It'll be great to see more ultra runners step down and run some shorter distances.
Do that speed work.
Add to the mix here in New Zealand. We're not a big country, so it's cool if we can kind of all come together every now and again.
Yeah,
so.
I remember racing with Vajin. I think his name's Vajin. Armstrong.
Yeah, he's a great guy.
Yeah, really nice guy. And he was stepping down, running a couple of marathons, and it's interesting talking to him about him doing some marathon speed work. And so it's kind of cool.
He's a really strict vegan, and I have no idea how he does it on that diet. Like, kudos to people who can do that much exercise on such a terrible diet.
We'll definitely have to get some vegans on the show to hear how they do it.
I would love to talk to a vegan because explain this to me how it works.
I know we've got a few top performing track runners who are vegetarians on the whole.
I'm not a scientist, but the way I see it, Hayden, is the cow has eaten the vegetables on my behalf.
Yeah.
So I don't need to eat vegetables because the cows and the sheep, they eat all that stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I just eat them.
Yeah, you get their nutrients.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's logic. It's logic.
So I've got this idea. We're totally going on tangents here. But an exercise diet regime where you choose an animal, but you have to eat and act like that animal. So
I'd be the goat.
So
you would get so fit being a goat because you just run mountains and eat goats.
So you can be a goat. You can graze on whatever you like, grass.
Tussocky stuff.
Yeah. So, you know, oats, wheat bix, stuff like that.
You have
to run around mountains all the time.
Yeah. And you'd have to be a grumpy bastard as well. I can definitely do this. I can be a goat. This is great.
And then you could be the bear. So you have to do lots of lifting, strong stuff. So maybe at the gym, deadlifts, squats.
But then you have to eat berries and picnic hampers.
And salmon.
Yeah, salmon.
Yeah.
Salmon.
And then you could be the tiger where you just eat meat.
Yeah.
You just eat meat. But you need to do a lot of running, sprinting.
Yeah, it's just short sprinting and hiding.
Interval training.
Hiding.
Yeah, a lot of sleeping.
Like your training would consist of sleeping, hiding in bushes, and then sneaking out and chasing people.
Yeah, yeah.
I like all of that.
You can be the caterpillar, lie around all day, and only eat salad. Anyway.
Okay.
Let's move on.
These training programs are available now. Look, the last one, the good old Manawatu Wanganui champs, and I mentioned this because spent a bit of time in good old Palmy, and you're from Palmy, Hayden. So
good old Palmy.
Great running in Palmerston North. David Lovelock taking the win. David Lovelock is like the nobody knows who he is, and he's just that guy who's just off the front bunch in pretty much about 80% of the national championships. So he's picked up heaps of fifths through to tenths at nationals. So good to see him take the win from Jake Jackson Grammer, who is out of Palmy Boys High but now lives in Otago, and winning for the women's Tamara Reed. And you're going, Tamara who? Tamara Reed is a former triathlete, and her husband is Shane Reed, who was a 2008 Olympian, and they run a great coaching business down there, F3 Coaching.
So
shout out to them. So well
done. Racing at the weekend.
Yeah, and obviously looking forward to talking to the race organizer for the WUU2K, the Wellington Urban Ultra, later to wrap up our local news. But moving now to international news / selection talk.
Yeah, so we'll get to the selection talk very shortly, but we should probably just mention a couple of results from the weekend. So
Val
was the big one, breaking 20,
boom,
20 meters.
I did a little jump. I was so excited.
Cool.
Like,
so
it's
she,
on.
Yeah,
it's
so she
on
threw 20.05 at the Monaco Diamond League.
Yeah.
Which I had a quick look at the list, and it puts her number 2, I want to say. I've closed the tab.
She bet number 1.
Yeah, she bet number 1, and she's got 4 throws in the top 10.
Yep.
Oh, no. It put her number 3. There's still the Chinese lady ahead of her. But
I wonder if
she hasn't
Hellier
thrown
is still
since
coaching.
Sort of April.
Yeah. And did you know this? So Valerie's old coach, Kirsten Hellier, has been contracted by the Chinese and has coached some Chinese athletes.
I see.
But Kirsten Hellier is now also coaching Jacko Gill. So I'm not sure if she's doing both. She's actually also working for Netball New Zealand, which I just found out the other day. So I'm not sure if she's coaching the Chinese. If she's not, I think they're a non-factor in Rio.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, it's really, yeah, you often see these sort of random performances from Chinese athletes in some events.
Yes,
and
yes.
Yeah, I'm not going to read into that randomness too much.
We'll talk about drugs on another show.
But really cool for Belle, and I'm so excited. I mean, often the media talks about her as being a sure set for a medal, but they don't actually look at the standings and look and see, well, there's actually like six women who are in the high 19s or over 20 meters, and there's a lot of depth and a lot of competition there. So
huge amounts.
Yeah, she's definitely not a shoo-in for the gold, but this event definitely sets her up for being one of the favorites.
Absolutely.
What other news have we got around the world?
Eric Speakman ran in Belgium. He ran a 3:43 to finish second behind an English guy, Tom Lancashire, and he's raced in New Zealand, hasn't he? I'm pretty sure he has.
Yeah.
It's a familiar name anyway.
I think maybe Commonwealth Games. I don't know. He's been around.
So obviously it's great to see Eric, despite missing out on Rio, still continuing. He's plying his trade in Europe, still gaining experience. So he's the young one, you know, he's a real young up and comer out of the group, so it's great to see that he's
I mean, he's having a great season.
And keep it going.
I mean, if it was I don't know, World University Games or something like that, I don't know if he'd still be eligible for that, but
probably.
I mean, he's running so well, and I'm looking forward to seeing him next season after this season's given him a lot of confidence, then he can mix it with the big boys.
Absolutely. It'll be interesting to see how he stacks it up, you know, racing domestically versus does he just put all his eggs in the European basket. But it's going to be exciting, especially Nick usually comes and races domestically as well. It could be a really exciting summer. So
totally.
Yeah.
And look, if there's any business owners out there or sponsors, like, give these guys a call, jump on their Facebook page and say, look, we'll cover your travel costs or something like that.
The best investment that a business owner could make right now is supporting someone like Eric Speakman.
Yeah,
because he is, in my personal opinion, which is not unqualified, he's very likely to make it to the 2018 Commonwealth Games, the 2020 Olympic Games. And, you know, he's doing this on his own. Like, he's sort of working part-time and borrowing money and doing it on a credit card.
Yeah, wearing his Napier Harrier singlet. He doesn't have a shoe sponsor. I mean,
back him up. Yeah. Help him out, you know. Yeah, so
totally.
And we will only take like 10% commission when that happens. So Catherine Marshall in Belgium as well ran a 2:05. Another big one, Angie Petty. How was that?
Oh,
run?
Yeah.
So
just
she
a second
was,
off her PB.
Yeah.
For the 800.
Where was that race? Liege. Liege.
Oh man, Liege. It sounds Belgium.
Yeah.
It sounds...
We'll go with Belgium.
Yeah.
So she ran two flat, basically 2:00.62 to finish second over 800 meters. So really good result there, and obviously a whole heap of other results. New Zealand development athletes and junior athletes warming up for the World Junior Champs, which start in the next couple of days. But if you want to check any of those results out, jump on to athleticsnewzealand.org.nz, check out their weekly roundup. It's a great recap of all the Kiwi results.
And also, on that note, if you want to keep track of athletics news, the nzherald.co.nz site has their own athletics page. So you can go through to, I think it's just nzherald.co.nz/athletics. And full, all the latest athletics news. So
yeah, it's
good
cool.
Place
they actually carry more than you would expect. Like It's I found that not too long ago, and I was surprised at all the articles that they carry on athletics. So, good stuff.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So the big news, though, of course, is the announcement of the team.
Very exciting. Yeah.
And so, which means we have our official winners of the New Zealand's Next Top Miler competition.
Yeah.
Obviously, Nick was going. He's the Tyra Banks of New Zealand middle distance running. But Julian Matthews and Hamish Carson both got the call up.
Yeah.
Which is super, super exciting.
So it is really exciting. And it's like, I know we're not involved in any meaningful way. We're not pacemaking workouts or sponsoring, but it feels cool because our first three shows featured those three athletes.
Yeah.
And I'd like to think we were on the bandwagon way before anyone else. Like, there's lots of publicity around it now, but we kind of picked this.
So cool seeing it all in the news and everything, eh?
It's cool. I really hope we can get a follow-up interview with all three of them, perhaps over the summer at some stage. It would be really exciting. So, yeah,
totally. And, I mean, just speaking of the coverage that there's been, I'll read a little excerpt from the Herald. Three New Zealanders will compete in the men's 1500 in Rio, but between 1984 and 2004, only three New Zealanders qualified for the Olympics in the 1500. So that was Tony Rogers, finished a credible ninth in Los Angeles.
I can tell you the other two because I'm smart. Do you want me to guess?
Yeah, give it a whirl.
Marty Johns in 1996 didn't make it out of the heats. He ran for Adams State.
Yeah.
And Peter O'Donoghue. And I'm not sure what year he went, but I don't
take
think
a stab.
84. Did he go to 84?
Yeah. So Peter O'Donoghue, 84, and Martin Johns, 96.
Yeah.
They both didn't progress.
Yeah.
And then the article, well done for that, by the way. Yeah. I didn't know that. That's sort of the dark ages of New Zealand.
I feel like
middle distance running.
I was watching, I VHS'd all of the 1996 athletics, and so I watched it again and again and again, basically until I threw out my VHS in about 2002. So yeah,
cool.
I know. That era, that kind of mid 90s era, love it.
Yeah, really.
Yeah.
See, I was in France when the Olympics were on. And I didn't actually know how New Zealand was doing because when I was watching the TV, there was this country called Nouvelle-Zélande.
Yeah.
And I didn't know that was New Zealand. So, anyway. So moving on to the article, in 1988, 1992 and 2000, there weren't any 1500 meter representatives at all. Then along came Willis. He reached the semifinals in Athens, claimed silver in Beijing, initially bronze, but rounded up to a silver after the drug test came back.
Yeah.
And was the oldest man in the London final, where he placed a disappointing ninth.
Yeah.
Cool to get all that coverage on the media and man, it's so exciting. And I kind of did a little bit of comparison between New Zealand's 1500 meter team and overseas. And so only five Americans made the standard to make the team. They're sending a team of three.
Yep.
But when you compare it to the other events, they've got like 30, 20 or 25 people making the standard. So only five from America, only two Australian males have made their team for the 1500. So it really shows, and this is the first time we've ever sent a full three runners in the 1500.
Wow.
So it really shows like how impressive our team of 1500 guys have done to stack that field.
And Nick Willis is one of them. But is this the Nick Willis generation?
Yeah.
So, we can definitely draw a clear line and say, you know, Nick Willis has helped these guys, got them to training bases, got them into the races, paced them through the races. But let's skip it back 8 years to Beijing when these guys were how old? 18 years old?
Yeah.
You know, how much of an influence does Nick Willis's medal in Beijing have on an aspiring 18-year-old like Hamish Carson and Julian Matthews?
Yeah. Well, it's actually 10 years since the Melbourne Games.
Yes.
Yeah, which is the other thing. So, skip back 10 years. You've got guys 15, 16 watching on the TV.
Yeah.
And seeing Nick take gold in Melbourne.
Mm.
And then 2 years later take a silver medal.
Yeah.
Which I remember because I just got into running. I actually watched Nick win the 1500 gold at the Commonwealth Games. And about 6 months after that, I entered my first race since school. So that kind of inspired me. And I actually went down to the track a few weeks after I did my first race and did a time trial on the track and see what I could do for the 1500.
Yeah.
It was a bit embarrassing. I realized how fast 330 is. But where was I going with that? So
it motivated you. Would have motivated dozens, if not hundreds of kids. And, you know, two of those kids are Hamish Carson and Julian Matthews. So
yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what excites me about that is the tip of the iceberg. Like, obviously, we've got Eric Speakman, who is on the cusp. You know, probably if you gave him another 6 months of training, you could put a good argument together that he could get the time.
Yeah.
There's a bunch of other guys who are really, really talented, but maybe injured, maybe just aren't in a position where they are able to go chasing the times in Europe. I think guys like Malcolm Hicks, who with more time, with more racing opportunities, could have made the 5K.
Well, and we've got these 1500 guys, and you know, the 1500 is a great base event because it's that combination of speed and endurance.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, hopefully, if we can focus on the 15, build a stock, then we'll get more 5K, 10K guys popping up at that world-class level. Obviously, we have them in the Robertson twins. But they're off doing their own very cool thing in Africa. So, yeah, it's interesting. It's interesting.
Oh, it's very cool.
And the rest of the squad, are we...
Yeah, so all up, we've got a team of 14 in the athletics squad, and that's 7 distance runners. Mm-hmm. So I did a little comparison over the previous Olympics. So in 2004, we had a team of 13 overall, and that had 8 distance runners. And by distance, I mean 800 and above. But it was interesting.
And you're including the walks.
No, not the walks. Sorry. Okay. Sorry, walkers.
we need to have a talk about walks at
some
stage.
We do. Because I would love to interview our two walkers in the team. Because they walk faster than most people run, let's be honest.
Quinton will be the most interesting interview we would ever do. Yeah. Guarantee. He is a interesting man.
And when we do the interview, we need to do another event for our personal decathlon. The 1K walk. but yeah, that would be a really cool interview. But yeah, I was looking at the 2004 team and they sent 8 distance runners. And aside from, I think it was Nick who made the semi-final, basically everyone didn't make that top 16. So
it was not great.
Yeah. So we can kind of come back to this shortly when we talk about who got left out of the team.
Yeah.
But interesting that from there they started to rein in the number of runners that they were sending. And I don't know if that was a conscious effort, like, well, that was a bit embarrassing sending 8 people. And because I kind of remember watching those games and thinking, oh man, we're not doing that good.
It's so tough because getting there is fantastic.
Yeah, yeah.
And it is a lifetime achievement to become an Olympian.
Yeah.
But that's not the point. That's not the point. And we, as taxpayers, we literally pay for this.
Yeah.
And no one wants to see the black singlet jogging in last place.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's,
and I hear you.
Yeah.
But I also come back to the, like, if you've hit the time, can you just go and pay your own way? Like, but yeah, I hear you. And from a public perspective, like looking on and you're tuned in the middle of the night to watch the marathon or whatever, and they come through in 2:50 or, you know, after exploding, and it's a bit disappointing. So, yeah. But that was 2004. And so on to 2008, we sent a team of 10 with 5 distance runners this time. So that was Adrian Blinko, Nick Willis, Liza Hunter-Galvin, Nina Rillstone, and Kim Smith. And Nick was the big standout, obviously, with the silver medal. And then in 2012, we had a team of 8 with just 3 distance runners. So Nick, Lucy, and Kim Smith.
Yep.
So... far out, what a turnaround from just 3. Now we've got 7. That's awesome.
Well, and but it's down to the individuals and the coaches. Like, they've done, these people have done a really good job. And we've been lucky enough to talk to Hamish and Julian. They've put their lives on hold. They've sacrificed a lot to get there. So, you know, and not to say that others haven't and don't, but it does speak to the dedication that you need. As much as I love running, I am also just a huge fan of athletics. The fact that we have 2 men going for the shot put, we've got a girl going for the pole vault.
Yeah.
And how
does that happen?
And their medal chances, their genuine medal shots, like, not sure things, but this is amazing. Like, this is really good. We've gone, and, you know, thank God for the internet age and sharing information instantaneously, because we've gone from being this kind of backwater of world athletics who was a bit behind the times in the technical events to now, hey, it turns out we've got some pretty good talent. And if we apply the best methods, hello, you know, the next thing you know, there's Jack O'Gill, there's Tom Walsh, there's Eliza McCartney, pretty amazing athletes. So very cool.
Yep, awesome. And so there has been a bit of news about one athlete in particular who didn't make the team. So he's a marathoner by the name of Paul Martelletti, and he's based in London these days, is a Kiwi. So he's run 2:17 is his best time in the qualification period. But the tricky thing is that the IAAF selection standard is 2:18, so he beat that. But the New Zealand selection standard is 2:12 for the A standard and 2:14 for the B standard.
Yeah.
So he's quite a way off that, but
a long way.
He has put in his application. What's it called when you?
He's put an appeal into the sports tribunal for his not non-selection, but non-nomination. Athletics New Zealand has not even nominated him to the NZOC.
Yeah, who then select him?
Who then would either ratify that selection or not.
Yeah. Okay.
So it's not even gone to the Olympic Commission to be considered.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's really interesting. I'm a big fan of Paul Martelletti. I've not met him, but I love his story.
Yeah.
He's done really, really well in the sport.
Mm.
But this, I'm not supposed to say controversial things. This is a waste of time. He shouldn't be appealing this decision.
Yeah, you reckon?
Oh, yeah. The Athletics New Zealand standard is 2:14. The B standard is 2:14, which, you know, the world record for the marathon now is, you know, under 2:03. What is it? It's, you know, 2:14 barely ranks you in the top 100 in the world.
Yeah.
And you can go to the Olympic Games if you run it. I'm not saying it's easy.
Yeah,
but it's not unachievable. It might be unachievable for Paul Martelletti, but the fact is not everyone gets to go to the Olympic Games. I feel bad for him, but he just hasn't run fast enough. And the New Zealand Athletics New Zealand is completely within its rights to set the standard as it sees fit based on its own policy. So
let me play the other side.
Yeah.
I'll come in from the other end. So most Olympic marathons are tactical, and what you often get is some guys going out really hard. Like I was watching the London one live and I saw, who was it? It was one of the Kenyan guys. He dropped a 14:15 5K at about 10 to 15K.
Yeah.
Just dropped the hammer. And that was the first time I saw him come past. He just raced on past, but he exploded. He didn't explode. I think he came fourth in the end. But a lot of those top guys exploded, especially the African runners.
Mm-hmm.
And so often what you get is these Australians, Canadians, Americans coming through and picking up a lot of those top 10 spots.
Yeah.
In the kind of 2:10 through to 2:14, 2:15 range.
Mm.
So I see why that's why they've set a 2:14 time. Because if you can't do that on a Berlin flat time trial type event, you're not going to do it on a tactical hot circuit around Rio. But I'm kind of like, do we need to just lessen that down a bit from 2:14 more to like 2:16?
I mean, it has been there previously.
To 2:16?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. The standard has been set and he didn't reach it. Now, if Jake Robertson, let's say Zane Robertson ran 2:18 and he's running the 10K at Rio.
Yeah.
And he said, I want to run the marathon. I'd put him in.
Yeah.
Because he can run a 3:35, 1500. So, you know, you're talking about tactics.
Yeah.
There's a guy who can do something, you know?
Yeah.
And
I actually looked up like the equivalent of a 2:14 according to the Macmillan calculator, which I trust. So a 2:14 marathon is equivalent to a 1:03 half.
Yep.
Or a 28:30 10K.
Yep.
So Paul Martelletti's PBs for the 10K, 29.30, 29.28
yep.
to the exact, and then 64.18. So just a little bit off the pace as far as that top end speed. You're talking about needing that top end speed to be tactical.
I mean, he very well could come through and have a great race and get in the top 20, but equally not. Well, he's getting a lot of, there's a lot of play on this on social media, a lot of sympathy, and I get it, it's well deserved. The Edge Radio morning show host Dom Harvey has put a post on Facebook, which is, you know, blowing up, getting a lot of reaction.
Yeah.
But let me throw something else in. Paul Martelletti actually represented England at the World 100 Kilometer Championships.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
So, you know, how does that factor in? And I can guarantee Athletics New Zealand wouldn't. They're not going to factor it in because the 100 Kilometer Champs is an IAU event, so it's a slightly different ballpark. So I don't think that has affected his selection.
Yeah.
But I wonder if in terms of the public perception, if people knew that, would they then be, oh, okay, oh, he ran 100 kilometers? That's, you know, so look, and I've got a lot of respect for Paul Martelletti, but he's not focused on the marathon. And he's not you can't put him in the same basket as Carson, as Matthews, as these guys who are putting it all on the line professionally. And that's not having a crack at him, but he hasn't met our standards. So harsh. This is that. Harsh, man.
So harsh.
Yeah.
Personally, I would love to have a black singlet in the marathon. I totally hear where you're coming from. And we need to draw a line in the sand. And unfortunately, he's probably just on the other side of that line at the moment.
I take back everything I said. It was way too harsh.
I love it. Cool. Well, we're going to jump straight to an interview with the founder and director of the Wellington Urban Ultra.
Excellent.
So on the phone today, we're very stoked to have Gareth Thomas, all the way from windy Wellington, although not so windy yesterday, we hear. The founder, is that correct? The founder of the Wellington Urban Ultra?
I guess you could pretty much say that, yeah. We've sort of, me and a friend kind of mapped out the course together, a guy called Stuart Mill.
Yeah.
We did a couple of recce runs of the event itself before we put it together. So I guess you could say, sort of founder, co-founder with Stu Mill.
Cool. And what's your background as a runner? Obviously, you must have a tendency towards the longer stuff, traily stuff.
Yeah, well, I guess you could say I kind of started like most of us start, you know, with a couple of casual 5Ks, a bit of road running here and there, and doing a half marathon to a marathon, and then going, it's not really enough, and just trying to expand, and then getting into the trails, and then growing from there, really. And I was based in Melbourne for quite a few years. And moved back about 4 or 5 years ago now, and I've just been, exploring Wellington's trails. I am actually from Lower Hutt myself, so I'm a Wellington.
Brilliant.
I just sort of been, running the trails here in Wellington for quite a few years now, and just really, really enjoy them. And I just thought it'd be really good to piece together a little ultra event in Wellington.
Excellent. Yeah. So tell us a little about the event. Obviously, the first year, and it's an ultra, but how long? Where does it run? And kind of what was your inspiration when you were mapping it out and putting together the ideas behind it?
Yeah, well, basically it all started with I've run quite a lot of the trails here with the Wellington running crew. They're called WORM, the Wellington Running Meetup Group. And these guys, they're pretty much a band of happy-go-lucky trail runners from all mixed walks of life, all ages. And we sort of get together you post an event or a run and you go if you want to, or you don't if you don't. Simple as that, you just get along and go. And by doing this, you can really get to know a lot more of the trails than you possibly would. People post a run and you go, oh yeah, I've never tried that before. So you just go along and run as a crew and chat and mingle and pretty much enjoy a bit of a 10K or a 20K or, whatever around the hills of usually Wellington or the surrounds.
Yeah.
So basically it came together after doing a few of these runs, a lot of running by myself as well, just to sort of, map out and, have a look at the trails themselves. And because Wellington, the way it is sort of geographically located, you've got the city in the centre, surrounded by the sea, and pretty much the central Wellington is, surrounded by the hills. So basically, in that respect, I mapped out that you could start at one point, northern point of the city or the southern point, and pretty much do a pretty much circular route of the hills that surround Wellington, starting one, finishing in the other. And awesome. And yeah, that's kind of where it came about, you know, and just sort of joined and pieced together the trails themselves.
Yep.
And put it into one run.
And how long was the race?
The run, we did a recce last year. I pieced together a recce with the Wellington crew and just put forward the idea to run it with the possibility of turning it into an actual event. And the first year we did it, it was about 50 to 55 kilometres.
Yeah,
I think it was 55 all up, actually, the complete recce we did. So there was the talk after that, a few mutterings of making it into a 60K run. And so I decided to throw in a bit of a nasty twist, the tip track. I'm not sure if you've done
it before. Yeah, it's a beautiful climb.
Yeah.
Yeah. So basically I threw that in to add the extra 5 or 6K in, which I think it's about 3K up and 3K back. So I added another 6K into the run. So it's actually almost a 61, 62K event.
Yeah.
The tip track leg starts at about the 43 kilometer mark. So you've got to do a hard slog up there and then back down, which is a bit of a pretty brutal, really. But
that was brutal.
Yeah, I got called a few words after doing that.
Nice. And so, tell us about the weekend. How did the event go? What were the numbers like?
The weekend was really good. I broke it down into two categories. I made a 42K version as well, mm-hmm. And that was really popular. Also, you sort of got to miss out Red Rocks and the tip track. Although you run down the tip track, whereas 60K you run up and back down the tip track.
Yeah.
The turnout was really, really positive. You know, I was kind of dubious about who would want to come to Wellington, or even those based in Wellington would want to, you know, enter a midwinter, you know, bang smack in the middle of winter.
Yeah.
Ultra marathon event and marathon event, you know, and I was thinking maybe 50, 60 people. I published a website, you know, late last year. And it was really slow to take off. And I was going, oh, you know, it might be a pretty casual event. And, you know, the past few months, it's just sort of, you know, word's gotten out and people have gone on, you know, they've jumped on board and said, oh, you know, I might be trained up enough for this sort of crazy behavior. And it grew up to all about, you know, the total entrants that came along on the weekend were 142.
Nice. Great work. Wow. Good work.
So it was really, really beautiful to see, you know, the support all around. You know, I got a local hotel on board to partner up called CQ Hotels.
Oh, yep.
We had them on last week, actually.
Yeah.
A guy called, you know, the general manager there, Olivier, he's been really, really, really helpful at and supportive at getting behind. And they put on the, you know, the registration. They had the conference room for us set up. And it was just, you know, it all tied together really perfectly for the weekend. And it was, you know, it was just a really nice weekend.
Excellent.
Oh, very cool.
Really well done.
Now, the course itself, just having a look on the maps, it must be, what, 90% off-road? Because I imagine people thinking urban ultra, it'll be mostly on-road, but you're mostly on trails.
Yeah, it's kind of a bit to suck the people in, you know. It's urban ultra, but it is... But it is a quite a hilly trail. The reason it's urban is because it's sort of pretty much based in the city itself.
Yeah.
Although it's pretty much surrounding the city, but it's pretty much about 90% hills and trails. You're right. Pretty much from Afiro Bay, you've got road up to Tip Track and Tawatawa Reserve, and there's a few little road crossings here and there thrown in for good measure as well. But yeah, 90% is pretty much trails and nice scenic hills to run on.
Cool. Excellent. And I don't know if you might not have caught the names, but who were the winners of the main events?
The winners, I've actually got them here. The winners of the female 60K was Jo Johansson.
Oh, fantastic. Nice. Wow.
She flew through. The winner in the male category of the 60K event was Mr. Tim Sutton.
Yep.
And he flies through. You know, he's a fast runner. The 42K event, we had Miss Narama Milner Olsen.
Mm-hmm.
She did really well as well. And the male 42, Mr. Calvin Mead.
Yeah.
I had some very pretty cool times on the course this weekend. It was quite good actually to see just how fast people would run it.
Yeah.
Pretty much the overall consensus of the run itself. And you know, it was really, really, really positive in most respects. A few little niggles here and there, but, you know, that's going to happen in a normal event. So
totally.
No, you did really well. What's the plans for next year?
Well, that's, you know, it's going to be in the works. So I'm going to have a bit of a think about things, and you know, I'll probably, you know, get a few more people on board and just see what we can come up with. But there's definitely going to be a plan for next year, and we'll just have to see how we go and planning that.
Yeah,
cool. Excellent.
Oh, very cool. Well, thanks for joining the show, and all the best for putting things together for next year. And I'm sure there'll be a bit of interest in maybe a little tag on over the Belmont Regional Reserve, maybe taking up another 40k or something.
definitely something to think about for sure.
Yeah, cool. Maybe you could offer it to people as a warm up.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thanks heaps, Gareth, and yeah, we'll speak soon.
Thanks, guys. Have a good one.
All right, so good to hear from Gareth about the Wellington Urban Ultra.
Yeah, awesome.
Does that interest you?
Does a little bit. I like running long. I'm not a huge fan of hills. Mm. No, take that back. It's not that I don't like them. It's that I don't run well up them.
Okay. they don't like you.
Yeah. So, but how enterprising. Like, how cool is that? Like, he's a runner. He does a lot of miles in the hills.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm going to start my own race. That's cool. Yeah, that's awesome.
Really cool. And especially, like, thinking of that, I was like, oh, man, traffic management, road crossings, potential for people to get run over.
Yeah.
City council, like, lots of spanners in the works.
I mean, he would have put so much work into that.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Just, I mean, looking at the website, which is wuu2k.co.nz.
Yeah.
You know, even the website, there's a lot of work that's gone into that, let alone the Facebook page, let alone marking it out. Like, all,
like 140 runners? I wonder how many marshals.
Yeah.
For that length.
Wow. I mean, that's just awesome. And good on him. And awesome effort to all those people who ran.
Yeah.
A, because you've at least run a marathon, if not an ultra marathon. B, you're supporting a local event. A first-time event. How cool is that? Like,
yeah, cool.
And don't get me, I've got a lot of time for, you know, Auckland Marathon, Rotorua Marathon. These people do a great job. But definitely, you know, all those runners out there, consider having a crack at these local events and supporting local, because it's
throw them into your calendar.
Defo.
And Wellington turned up to the party with some good weather as well.
Amazing.
Yeah, in the middle of winter, which is very rare.
I love that, because he mentioned that, and so much of the ultra stuff happens over the summer, and there's very little activity over the winter, so good on him. Great effort. Hopefully it'll grow and grow. Check it out for next year.
Totally. So next up, we've got Angie Smith. Angie Petty. So she is on fire, tuning up really well for Rio. So
New Zealand's premier female
800
meter runner. I was going to say middle distance runner. Nikki Hamlin might have something to say about that.
So
great interview.
Cool. Here we go. On the phone today, I'm very stoked to have Angie Petty. I was about to say Angie Smith, but Angie Petty. So welcome to the show, Angie.
Oh, thank you very much. Yeah, it's nice to be on the show all the way from England. So
And so what's happening in your life at the moment? I know you just ran a race a couple of days ago, but you're doing a bit of a training block over in England?
Yeah. So I've been over in Europe for about 6 weeks now. So I came over on the 4th of June and just based in Germany for the first month in Cologne doing races out of there.
Nice.
Did about four races in June. And then, I've come over to the UK a couple of weeks ago to base with my husband Sam's parents live in the UK and North Devon, so because Sam's British, so he's come over as well, and it's been really cool to base here and together with his parents, and obviously continue my build up to Rio here. It's really familiar for me because I've been over here for the last few years when we've stayed as parents before, so it's been a really good build up, and still doing obviously races here and there. Last week in Belgium, had a season's best, my 800, so
yeah, really happy. Congratulations on that. you must be stoked and sort of rounding into sort of peak form.
I was really happy. I think my first few races were a little bit off what I was kind of wanting. But then I do tend to find that I take a wee bit to kind of get going, get my times down. And obviously you want to peak at the right time, so I wasn't stressing too much. I or the first race though was really, really technical, probably the slowest first lap race that I've done in years.
Really?
So,
yeah.
But then that's still experience as well, learning how to, you know, have a really strong second lap if that does happen in a championship or whatever. So
yeah.
You can take something from every race. And then I ran a few 2-1s and then I ran a 1500 PB of 4.7. So that gave me really good confidence.
Yeah, nice.
That one was in Finland in a really good fast race, and only just off the Olympic standard. So I thought, all right, if I can, you know, do a 15 PB, now I need to get my 800 times down. And then came away with the 2 flat last week. So awesome. Hopefully you can get back under 2 soon.
If you had got the standard for the 1500, would have you considered going for that as well?
I did think about it, but yeah. The 1500 is before the 800.
Oh, okay.
Obviously, if you do an event, you always want to aim for the best possible results. So although it would have been really hard for me to have made the 15 final, obviously that's what you'd aim for. But the 15 final was the night before the 800 meter heat. So,
yeah, sure.
Which was the next morning, not even 24 hours later, it's literally, you know, next morning. So it would have been maybe not the best idea to, you don't want to run your best event if you're a bit tired from already competing. So I think to just fully focus on the 8 was the best idea. But then maybe if I got the time, I may have been a bit more tempted to. But I don't think it was meant to be this year, but maybe in the future I can look at doing more of the double step up. As I get older, but at this stage I definitely want to focus on the 8. So
Now that 1500 time, were you kind of putting some extra focus in on that longer sort of endurance stuff, and if so, like what sort of confidence does that give you going into race tactics for Rio, the extra strength?
I guess as I'm getting older, I'm finding my endurance is improving probably more than my speed. I still think I've got, you know, hopefully pretty good speed, but I'm probably, noticing more improvement in the endurance and the longer reps and things like that. So Maria and I have worked on, you know, getting my endurance improved a lot. Like my 3K PB was pretty terrible before this year. over 10 minutes was a bit embarrassing, just over 10. But then I got that down to 9:30. Which awesome. Is, you know, not incredible for a 3K runner, but for an 800 runner, it wasn't too bad. So I think my endurance has really helped, just having that really good base behind me. And then just, really working from there to, as we started to do the more 15, 8 work and things. And I think it gives me a lot, more of a base for the 8. So then when we do my speed and strength work, it really just a lot easier to build from that. And I do enjoy the 15 races just to have something else, you know, have a bit of a change from the 800 and then I find when I come back to the 8, so it feels, I guess, a bit easier because you've been doing 3 quarter laps and suddenly I need to do 2. So
yeah, exactly. That mental barrier.
And maybe a little bit more tactical, you know, getting used to being in the bunch a bit more, like obviously that happens in 8s too, but even 15 for me just really helps with that too. So
it sort of goes out one way or the other. You're either one of those who takes it out hard or you kind of sit back and look to pick people off as they slow up in that last lap. What sort of runner are you? What would you classify yourself? Are you the sit and kick, or are you the get out there and just smash that first lap and try and hang on?
Yeah, I think a bit of both depending on the race, but yeah, I don't mind leading. Like I think in New Zealand and Australia I often, you know, end up leading quite a lot, but over here obviously you're up against girls that have got faster PBs, and obviously it happens sometimes in Australia too, they're still really good fields, but especially over here when you're running, you know, 157 girls and things, and sometimes it's like just being able to go out hard, but they'll go out really hard, so you kind of just sit and follow and try and hang on and try and finish strong. But then I do obviously thrive and love that kind of that feeling of being in just behind and having, you know, pick them off at the last 100 meters, and it's so exciting when you're trying to catch them, and you know, so
yeah,
but
totally.
Then I don't mind, but then I also don't mind leading. Sometimes you have to lead, and if it's going to be really slow, I'd rather probably get to the front and get out of trouble rather than, you know, being really boxed and pushy and things. So
awesome.
So I think it's good to be able to be versatile, because yeah, if you can run in different ways, then that's only going to help in championships. So
yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And keep those around you guessing as well. That's cool. So obviously you've been selected for the Rio Olympics, so congratulations for that. That is that must be a massive dream come true.
Yeah, it is. Thank you. Yeah, definitely a dream since I was very little. So
Oh, very cool. Yeah, and speaking of that, like, how far back do you remember thinking, oh, I'd love to go to the Olympics one day? Or do you remember sitting in front of the TV and watching the Olympics and picturing yourself in the competition?
Yeah, so I can't remember a specific time I really first thought about it.
Yeah.
I was thinking 1996 Olympics, I would have been 5. So
yeah.
I feel like I maybe roughly vaguely remember something about that, but not very clearly. But then I do remember it was definitely well under the age of, you know, 8 or 9 that I had been at least watching videos of it and seeing, wow, okay, you know, replays of Peter Snell and replays of John Walker and everyone. Like, and just being really inspired, because I know that my family and people have said to me that, oh, I remember you telling us when you were, you know, 7 or 8 that you're going to go to the Olympics one day and things like that. And I did write a letter back when I was, must have been about 8. Yeah. About 10, I think, because we just moved to a new house in Rangura. And yes, saying that I wanted to go to the Olympics one day, and then put it in a part of the house that was getting, like, we're getting renovations and it was getting blocked off. So I put a letter in there saying I want to go to the Olympics one day, and then completely forgot I put it in there. And then someone else moved to the house, and a few years later, so just recently, they actually told me that they're moving things around and found this letter that I wrote when I was a little kid. So yeah, so I guess there's things like that. That I definitely been aiming for it for a long time, and then I joined a club when I was 10. So started chasing that dream.
And was running always the thing that you saw yourself getting to the Olympics with, or was it something else, like, I don't know, synchronized swimming?
it was always the running. I think I did quite well at school, you know, as a little kid in the cross country and zones and things like that. Without much training, really, obviously, at that age, just do it for fun. And then when I was 10, a teacher actually told my mum to make sure I didn't join it too young, because she'd seen so many young kids get pushed into it and you know, training really hard at a really young age. So I joined a club when I was 10, but it was really just for fun and just not, you know, only training a couple times a week and things like that. But then I got a coach, Maria, who's still my coach now, started coaching me when I was 13. So that's when my training started.
That's
very cool. Started to, you know, bump up a wee bit. But as I say, still, she was very good to make sure we didn't overtrain at a young age. And and then first time representing New Zealand when I was 14 at the Pacific School Games. And I think that gave me a really awesome taste of international competition as a wee 14-year-old racing against the Australians and things. And and it's been from there. So
awesome.
Yeah, but I just always had that passion for it, was the main thing, really, just to enjoy it and know that through hard work I could reach my goals and things. So
Totally. Oh, that's very cool. And cool to hear you use the word enjoy, because I know that last lap of an 800 can be pretty brutal. So it's pretty important that there is that enjoyment factor, especially when you're young and not being pushed too hard, but just enough. It's really tricky for coaches of those younger athletes to get it right, eh?
I think that's the thing, like, if you don't have the enjoyment, you probably end up gonna not wanting to carry on, kind of thing. And I mean, obviously, as you say, it's times where it is really, really tough, and obviously the training, sometimes you're going to throw up after a session and things. But I mean, I think as long as you're enjoying it and you're always getting things out of it and you know, pushing yourself. And then obviously there's times where you're like, for me, I find probably quite hard when you don't have good races and you're kind of, oh man, like, even the whole season when I was younger, like when I was 15, I had a season where I was running like 4 seconds slower than the year before, and just you know, and you, but I think those times make you stronger in the long run. And obviously injuries and illnesses and things, and then you come back and, you know, it makes you appreciate it. So,
absolutely. Yep. And what does your training look like nowadays? I mean, the 800, there seems to be sort of two ways of training for it. Either you sort of do the 400, 800 style training, which more that speed base, or you go kind of the Peter Snell way and you do lots of mileage and hope that the speed sort of takes care of itself, more or less. What about yourself?
I guess we're kind of in the middle probably of that, quite similar to Maria Matola kind of training, because my coach Maria has been in touch a bit with her old coach, Margot Jennings. So
she was the 2000 maybe gold medalist. A little while back anyway.
Sydney, wasn't it? Because of course Kelly Holmes was,
Did the
double. Yeah.
Cool. So we just cut out there, but we were talking about your training. So you take sort of a middle of the road approach with a mixture of mileage and speed. So kind of how does that look sort of week to week, I guess, on a general typical week? I don't know if there's such a thing.
It's obviously a different time of the year, but I'd say like in the endurance phase, I'd probably only get up to about 80 Ks, sometimes 85 will be my biggest week. So six days a week, we normally have a rest day. Sometimes I might just do a 20 minute jog or something very easy on the rest day, but normally it would be a total rest day, and then the rest of the week, 6 days. And then some of those would be double days, you know, with the second run might only be 20-30 minute, but with a hard session so as long as you've got the one hard session or one longer run, and then gym as well. I do gym 2 times a week.
Is that just weights, or do you do some other sort of supplemental cardio work as well?
Mainly weights, bit of kind of plyometric things as well, but yeah. For the gym sessions. So and then I can do, you know, core my a bit on my own, like other days as well. Not a set kind of thing, but got a few other exercises and things that I can do other days, but not necessarily every day depending on the training load and things. So typically I would have sessions Monday, Wednesday, and then Monday, Wednesday might be bigger interval sessions, and then Thursday just pure speed. Depending on time of year again, but and then Saturday either session again or race, and then Sunday's long run, Tuesday's another run, and then Tuesday will be a run as well, and then Monday with the sessions I'll have either gym or second run as well, and then maybe another run on the Thursday or gym. So yeah, it changes around a bit, but typically about 10 sessions a week, and make sure I do lots of speed work in the kind of strength and then the race specific phase. They'll be more like 1K reps and stuff and earlier on. And I still make sure I do a bit of those longer reps and tempos and things as well when I'm, you know, in that race specific stage, because you still don't want to lose that endurance. Be a lot of the, I don't know, one of my favorite sessions, for example, will be like a 600 session where I have 5 to 6 600s.
Yeah.
The first 400 at like 1500 pace, and then the next two absolute max. Wow. And then
that's a session and a half. Jog. That's awesome.
And then 600 jog between the intervals, and then obviously you need lots of those fast 300s and things as well as an 800 runner, and flying 30s, and just we do quite a bit of hills, and and then my longest run would be an hour and a half. And the tempos and things as well, so we get a really good mix. Maria, my coach, is really good at planning the training, and obviously things might change a wee bit depending how I'm going and how I'm feeling and things like that, and then also just monitoring my heart rate, you know, in the morning to see how recovered I am, and nice, and just those things that all add up, and peaking at the right time, hopefully.
So I have to pick up on that heart rate stuff. If your heart rate's a bit more elevated than usual, would you take it a bit easier that day? Is that kind of how you'd read it?
Yeah, if it was really high, like I think if it's just a little bit high for a day or so, it's not so bad. But if it starts to be elevated for quite a few days, then you know that you might be, you know, you could be getting run down or getting sick. So better to take a slightly easier day, or occasionally even a day off if you're really not well, obviously, than to get worse. I know what my kind of lowest to average kind of heart rate is. So if it starts to get well above that, then I start to look into it, and we
say warning signs are there. Oh, that's very cool. And so, kind of looking back on the last few years, like you've done some pretty big competitions. Like you've done 2 world champs now. Hopefully I'm right in saying that.
That's right, yeah.
4th in the semi-final last year. 5th at the Commonwealth Games in Glasgow, which is a phenomenal result. And then just last year at the World University Games, dropping a PB in the final to win the gold medal. Do you want to talk through sort of your favourite racing memories so far in your career?
Yeah, I'll definitely have to say it has to be the World Unis, because not only was it, to win the gold, but as you say, to get a PB and first time under 2 minutes in that final.
Absolutely.
I've been chased. Yeah, that 2 minute barrier, I guess, is a big thing in women's 800.
Yeah,
so I've been something I've been stuck on 2 flat for a few years. Well, I ran 2 flat actually. Went from 2.3 to 2 flat in 2012.
Yeah.
But that was like a massive breakthrough from 3 seconds. So that was kind of. I'd run 2 flat. I hadn't been consistently run that, but then but the next year, 2013 and 2014, I running 2 flats and 2 ones and things. So kind of, been close. But then finally last year, I I was running 2 flats, kind of, or 2-1, 2 flat going in, and then I did 2 flat in the semi, and awesome. 2 flat 0.6, I think it was. I remember feeling like I had actually, like I was pushing, but I had I had a tiny bit left in that semi.
Yeah.
I thought, oh man, maybe that means I can break 2. So the next day just felt, in the final, I was chasing this Jamaican girl, and she went really hard in a 56 first lap, and I went through in 57, and which is still fast first lap for me. But then just managed to come home really strong, and finally went under the 2, and then to get it, I got 159.06, so by almost a second as well.
I was so happy.
So that would definitely be my best memory. And I mean, Commonwealth Games obviously as well, though, I think, because that's obviously the amount of people in the stadium and the kind of hype for the Commonwealth was incredible, being in that final too. So
And it's not like the Commonwealth Games is a weak field in the 800. I mean, you've got like you say, the Jamaicans and the Brits and South Africans there's
and
the Kenyans of course. How can I forget that?
So no, that was really special as well. And my family were at the Commonwealth Games in the stadium watching me. And I think the amount of New Zealand pub that kind of got behind and stuff just was really overwhelmingly special for me. So
Really cool. No, that's awesome. Yeah. And I kind of equate that that sub 2 in the women's 800 to, it's kind of similar to the sub 10 in the men's 100, where once you sort of break that barrier, then you're sort of playing with the big girls. Done on breaking through that, and hopefully there's a couple more to come in a few weeks' time. And looking forward to Rio, what's kind of your goals between now and then? Like, have you got any more races, or is it just training mode now?
I just found out, because I'd always planned to do just one more race. I was thinking of doing the Morton Games in Ireland this weekend, which I did last year, and ran sub 2 at it last year.
Cool.
Between World Unis and World Champs. So I knew it was a really good meet. But then I just found out when I was coming back from Belgium after running 2 flats that I got into the London Diamond League this weekend.
Oh, congratulations.
So I'm really happy to be doing that. I think the 800 is not officially a Diamond League event. Like, it's not one of the ones for points, but it's still obviously part of the Diamond League program, and it's still we'll have a lot of top international athletes competing in it. I know that, some of the girls are already doing it, well under 2 runners, so 2 minute runners. So it'll be very exciting to be there. And I know that they always get good crowds, and it's a really special event. So I feel really honoured and blessed to be in such a big event leading into Rio. I think it'll be really good, like, just to be in such a fast field with, at that kind of meet. I've done 2 Diamond Leagues before, and so I was just cool. I didn't really expect to get into this one at all. Like, last year I didn't get in on my PB of 159, whereas this year I've got in on my season's best of 2 flats. So it's funny how it works sometimes, but I'm just really grateful to be in that.
That's very cool.
Just to continue training, and got another week in the UK, and then off to Germany with my coach for the Mannheim. Maria arrives this week and we go to Mannheim for the New Zealand pre-Olympic camp and then over to Rio. So,
Oh, very cool. And for Rio, is it three rounds for the 800 or is it four these days?
No, there's still three, So the 800 heats on the 17th of August, the semis 18th and the finals the 20th.
Oh, man, well, we'll definitely be tuning in this weekend for the Diamond League and, wishing you all the best for Rio. But just to finish off, we've got a couple of rapid-fire questions and you can kind of elaborate. They don't have to be rapid-fire answers. So four of them. So what is your all-time favourite place to run in New Zealand?
Are you meaning not just track, but like...
Could be a track or it could be a trail somewhere or an area that you like to run.
I probably have to say I'm quite a home person, so I'm from Christchurch and, love running around there. So I think one of them would be Bottle Lake or the Port Hills. I think the views from the Port Hills is so nice up there, the Harry Owl Trail and around there. But then tracks, I've got quite a few, so probably good old Timaru track is our closest at the moment, but hopefully we'll have a new track not too long in Christchurch.
It's been a while, eh? What are we at now, 5 years or so since
by next year hopefully.
Very cool. And what has running taught you about life?
Oh gosh, that's quite a deep question.
Yeah, that's a deep one.
I think to for me, because I am a Christian, so I run for God. So that's a massive part of it and who I am. So to use the talent that He's given me to always be the best athlete I can be and glorify Him. So I guess to persevere through hard times and things like running. You're not always gonna get the results you want and then just like anything in life, there's always going to be ups and downs on the road, but just to keep pushing forward and keep being positive and those things will make you stronger and things and so it's taught me a lot of different things and meet a lot of amazing people through it as well, so it's really a big question. It's a lot more you could say too, so
Brilliant. And what's your last meal before a race and what would be your first meal after a race?
Your last meal would probably, I'd try and be a little bit flexible in case, can't always get what you want there, but because I'm gluten-free as well, I'm celiac, so to be a bit more careful, but normally...
That makes it tricky in Europe.
and in Asia actually with all the sauces and the rice and things. So I just be careful, so normally I love to have rice on race day, probably my last big kind of meal before a race, 3 or 4 hours before. But then sometimes I might have peanut butter and jam on gluten-free bread as well. About 3 hours before. So, and then the banana will be the good old, hour and a half, 2 hours before the race. That would be the last thing I'd have. And then maybe just a tiny bit of honey, but closer to the race. But and then after a race, probably good old chocolate milk protein bar or something. And some have a wee treat sometimes as well after I start.
And last question, what is the single best piece of coaching advice you've ever been given?
Probably there's a lot of things, but probably to trust your training and to that recovery is, not to overtrain. Sometimes you think more is better, but it's not always, quality, not quantity, I'd say, as well. That it's all about getting the right sessions and the right training in and not necessarily just hammering everything. I guess in terms of actually technical thing to me would be to relax sometimes in a race when I, really trying to push and you tense up and things. For me it would be to relax, not to... tighten up too much.
The case for getting kind of maximum speed? Is that kind of the goal? So you're not tensing up too much when you're trying to really go for it towards the end?
Definitely. So especially in that last 200 where that tends to be what I naturally would probably want to do. But I have actually thought that in some of my best races, relax and then, it's funny you actually end up running faster. So
That's interesting. Cool. And I have to ask you, you're an early childhood teacher by trade, is that right?
I'm actually partway through my degree, so I do nice. Preschool teaching. Relieving just part time at a local preschool. Cool. In Kaiapoi near us. So I really enjoy that. But I am partway through my degree as well. Almost finished, actually. I've got two papers to go for a Bachelor of Arts in Education and Psychology. And then I hope to do the extra year to do primary school teaching rather than early childhood. I think I really like, I love early childhood too, but I really want to be a primary school teacher. So
yeah, nice.
That's the plan. Yeah.
And I have to ask, do you ever race the kids and do you let them win?
I think I do. The amount of piggybacks I have to give at free school as well is great fun. But you got to let them win. Yeah. I think, it's great seeing the next generation come through.
Cool. No, that's awesome. Yeah. Well, thanks so much, Angie, for joining the show. And we're totally 110% behind you and behind the team. It's so exciting to have such a nice, strong distance team this time around. And I'm sure you guys will make us all proud.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm so excited to be part of the team. I mean, it's amazing, especially with the three 1500 meter guys. Gonna be so cool. So can't wait to be there in Rio with them all. So
And where can people follow you online? Where's the best place to go?
I have a Facebook athlete page. Just under NGPD, I think New Zealand Middle Distance Runner or something.
Cool.
Yeah, or my Instagram, I guess. and then I do those blogs for Athletics New Zealand as well for the Road to Rio.
Brilliant.
Cool.
Well, we'll put all those links on the show notes. So thanks again for joining the show.
Oh, thank you very much for having me.
Fantastic interview. Well done, Hayden.
Oh, yeah. It was mind-blowing, eh? Up for a journalism award.
Yeah, but I haven't listened to it.
Neither have I.
But I think that's one of the top two interviews
I'm recording you've ever it done. Later tonight.
Yeah. Good
thanks,
work.
Thanks, Angie. So, training talk. We're going to talk about LSD.
Yep. Never done it.
Drugs.
long, slow distance.
Long, slow distance.
Your long runs.
Or I call it, in Tempo Fit, we call it the long, social, scenic distance run.
Do you really?
Yeah. Which would be the LSSD. LSD. Long, social distance.
LSSDR.
Yeah. And I've heard people say long, steady distance, long. But we call it social distance because then it's kept at a conversational pace. So you're talking to someone the whole way. It's at an easy pace, so you're not pushing, you're not racing each other.
And look, just to shape this up, we're having a meandering conversation. We're going to see where this goes. I have some really firm views on long runs. I think it's the linchpin of your week.
Yeah,
there's lots of stuff that you can move around and change up. You almost never take out the long run. I see it as it's just such a huge component, and it's the last thing that I think an athlete should ever drop.
Yeah.
But,
So, okay. So why do an LSD run or long run?
That's a good question.
Do you want to kick us off?
Yeah.
Because Arthur Lydiard said so?
Yeah, Arthur Lydiard said so. No, the number one correlation between how you train and performance is the amount of kilometers that you run in a week. And so this doesn't hold true at an individual level, but if you look at the population, the number one correlation between, say, your 5K time and the amount you train is the distance. So the more distance that you run, the faster you will be. There are many, many exceptions to this rule, but generally speaking, the more you run in any given week, the faster you'll be. And the long run knocks out, generally speaking, between 20% and 30% of all of your running for the week. There's so much more than that, though. It's relaxing, it's fun, it brings you close to nature. It's my best memories as a runner are doing long runs, both with other people and by myself. It tests you like no other run.
Yep.
Like, it's a whole different kind of hurt. if you go into a bad place on a long run, which I'm not advocating, but I really do think it is the linchpin to the week. But yeah. For yourself, Hayden, like you're essentially doing this for a living. So when you write up someone's program, how much emphasis do you put on the long run? How important is it to you?
And like you, it's the first thing that goes into the plan. So, the key race goes in first,
yep.
And then you start working backwards, slotting in your long runs.
Yep.
So if you're, say, training for a half marathon, then you're going backwards from there, locking in the key long runs that you want.
Yep.
And for me, and then from there you add in speed work and then your workouts and your easy runs, but definitely the core ingredient, the steak on the plate is your long run. And then you spice it up with your shorter stuff.
Yep.
But I mean, for me, the main reason is building that aerobic engine. Like you say, you've got to run miles. You've got to do physical activity to build that aerobic capacity to be able to run long.
Yeah.
And I think it was Arthur Lydiard who said that once you get past kind of 90 minutes, stuff starts to happen and you start relying on a different energy system.
I actually saw a really great quote once, and it was in a sports administration report, really interesting. But it was a triathlon guy who claimed or made the statement that Arthur Lydiard was New Zealand's greatest ever sports scientist.
Mm.
Because if a sports scientist is someone who comes up with a hypothesis and then tests it. Then repeats the test in multiple conditions and then tries to prove himself wrong, tries to prove himself right. And that is exactly what Arthur Lydiard did. Yeah. And his key finding, one, it was A, miles, and two, the long run.
So they famously did the Waiatarua loop. They started from Lydiard's house in kind of Roskill.
Yeah.
It's basically central Auckland. They go all the way out west, run up the hills in the Waitakere's, and then come back 34 Ks in the hills every week.
Yeah. And, you know, long run, if we're talking about someone who's training towards a marathon, it becomes really easy because the long run is this marker that you need to keep an eye on, you know, each week that you're building up because – you know, if you can get up to running 32K and then 34K, it's logical. You're building your endurance up and you're building that distance up towards a marathon. What people sometimes have trouble grasping is how that translates over to the shorter distances. Mm.
So. Yeah, because in the case of Lydiard, you had Peter Snell doing the 34K run and his key event was the 800. Training like a marathon runner, but he's running the half mile.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like I often get half marathon, people targeting a half marathon come to me and they're saying, you know, I've done a couple, I'm stuck on the same time, what do I need to change? And one of the key things is getting them running those long runs up into the high 20s often and even into the low 30s.
Yeah.
And they're like, what? I have to do a half marathon outside of my half marathon?
I'm training for a half marathon. Why would I run more half marathons?
So... And the reason we're trying to build that aerobic engine, we're trying to mentally get them used to going long. And so when you cut it shorter, a half marathon becomes a fast run. It's not, the distance isn't the challenge anymore.
Yeah. And there's lots of physiological stuff that we could talk about. So the recruitment of muscle fiber types and
capillaries and
lots and lots of stuff. And none of it's particularly controversial, but it's hard to say exactly what the breakdown is and what has the most benefits, but we don't even need to go into that because evidence over 50-60 years has shown us that this works. From I think you can make an argument that down at 800 meters perhaps you don't need to head out for a long run, but you know, anything 5k up, a long run is absolutely,
I would say, even 1500 up. I've never met a 1500 runner who's running really, really elitely and not running over 90 minutes.
I've heard of people who capped it out at an hour.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. But, you know, literally not many.
Yeah.
And then really funny sort of training, like obviously really speed centric and often, you know, if I was a huge Lydiard acolyte, I would say, oh yeah, and then they got injured and it's because they didn't do their long run. Not necessarily true. Look, there.
But also, you look at some of those people's track workouts and they're doing a 2-hour track session.
Oh yeah, 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 so exactly.
It's sort of counters.
It's funny. Seb Coe's father and coach was always keen to propagate this idea that Seb's training was quite unique, and they came up with this perfect system, and they did come up with a really good system.
Do you remember what his longer runs were?
90 minutes comes to mind. Yep. I have some of his old programs at home, I have to check on that. But, you know,
he is the other end of the spectrum.
Yeah,
really,
he was very speed-based and a lot of squats in the gym, and that's all great. I've got a lot of time for that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
They used to argue that they didn't do Lydiard miles, but then when you look at all of the training that they did and include all of the warm-ups and all the warm-downs, he's touching like 80 miles a week, which is it's pretty good. You know, that's pretty high mileage. So
Now, so, what is a long run in your mind? Do you think you need to go over 90 minutes?
I say I don't care about distance. I don't talk about distance at all. I go 90 minutes.
Yeah,
and for me, it's 90 minutes because that's when stuff starts happening.
Yeah,
in my muscles. So I will run out of energy. I'll run out of glycogen.
Yeah.
And I'll have to start using oxygen as an energy source. My muscles will generally just get a bit tired. I'll start to feel lethargic. So that to me is when a long run starts, 90 minutes.
Yeah.
For other people, it might be less.
And probably for teenagers listening, it's probably going to be less.
Yeah.
More sort of around the 40, 50 minute mark, depending on your background. But
And I'd like to think, we haven't phrased this particularly eloquently, but I'd like to think it's a no-brainer. A long run is essential. You've got to do it. For me, the two key questions is how far and how fast, because you can overdo it.
Yeah. So you can, 90 minutes, but what about if you're on the slower end of the field and you're training up for a marathon?
This is where race-specific preparation comes in.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you're running, I don't know, 7-minute Ks and you're wanting to get up to your mid-30s to be ready for the marathon.
Yeah, it's tough. I think there's definitely an argument for putting a cap on it.
Yeah.
If you're training for a marathon, there's got to be a point of diminishing returns, and I think you need to look pretty seriously once you get over 2 hours and 45 minutes, 2.5 hours. And I'm not to say that you can't go to 3.5 and all that sort of stuff, but you need to be pretty
careful. You're getting
careful.
Into kind of danger territory.
Yeah. And a lot of people, it's a long time to be on your feet, and a lot of stuff can go wrong.
Yeah. So I usually say 3.5 hours is my cap. But I sort of preface that with taking some walk breaks, taking some breaks where you can get fluids down you and rehydrate properly.
Stop for a Starbucks.
Yeah. Chuck some sugar down your system. But I mean, for me, I find once I get over 2.5 hours for those long runs, it gets really, really dicey, and your technique starts to wane, and that's when you start getting those IT band injuries and, those really ones that come on when your cadence starts dropping and your form starts collapsing.
And the key thing is, if you're out there for, let's say, 3 hours, you're going to be getting a really huge training effect. If we go back to the long run starts at 90 minutes, well then, you know, that's kind of 2 hours of training benefit that you're out there, specific training benefit. That's good. That's great.
Yeah.
You know, and you're doing this in the context of your other training throughout the week.
Yeah.
So,
And that's the thing. A lot of the training plans that people use is you get to your Sunday long run and you're already fatigued. So you're running that 2-hour, 2.5-hour run in a fatigued state, which makes it a lot harder.
It does. And it brings me to how fast.
Yeah.
So what do you advocate, Hayden, in terms of the pace or the perceived effort that people should be putting into long runs?
I bring it back to that long social distance. So, being able to talk the whole way. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the antisocial runner is the one who speeds off at the front.
Yeah.
Keeping it easy is important, because you're not there to develop leg speed.
Yeah.
You're there to develop aerobic capacity, your time on your feet, that muscular endurance. So and going faster defeats the purpose of the run.
That's a really key point, time on your feet. Like, I have, and people will argue against this, but I have previously argued that you might get more benefit out of running 20K at 6 minute Ks than 20K at 5 minute Ks at certain points in your build up, because it'll just mean you're out there for longer and you'll be getting a different physiological adaption just by being on your feet for longer. And it's so easy to overdo it, but one thing that I've consistently found with elites is that they don't. And I've been lucky enough to run with a lot of really fast people, and I can never keep up with them on the track. But I've been lucky enough to do long runs with, like I said, you know, 209 marathoners and 820 steeplechasers and 27 minute 10K runners, and they don't mind doing long runs at my long run pace.
Yep. 4:30s.
And I can't help but think, if it's good enough for those guys, then, you know, conversely, it's good enough for me to step back and, you know, as someone who would normally run 5 minute Ks, I've got no problem running 7 minute Ks for a long run if it means I'm going to be running with someone.
Yeah.
Because it goes back to that long social distance.
Yeah. I totally agree with you. And my only proviso that I'd add to that is, don't run so slow that you sacrifice technique. So like, I've been doing a lot of coaching. We've got a kids holiday program with Tempo Fit. And I've been doing a little bit of running with them, and I'm sore afterwards running at, you know, 6 minutes, 7 minute Ks. My Achilles are aching, and that's just because I'm not used to that technique. My legs aren't moving the same speed. And so as long as it's in that kind of window, and of what you're used to and what's acceptable for you. You should be able to talk the whole way.
And the one, I've done a lot of my long running by myself, and that was just for convenience, because it meant I could get up and leave home and get back when I wanted and have some bacon and eggs afterwards. But more and more, I'm a huge fan of linking up with other people. It's just so important. And obviously, for people who are lucky enough to be here in Auckland, Hayden, can you tell us a little about the Tempo Fit Sunday runs?
Yeah, it makes this whole discussion sound like a promo for what was coming. So with Tempo Fit, we hold some Sunday runs, and so they're actually free for anyone to join. And so last Sunday we went over to Rangitoto Island, which was amazing. We got a good window of weather. And seriously, if anyone comes to Auckland, forget about any of the other sites in the city. Just take the ferry over to the island and go trail running. Take a packed lunch, store it in the bushes somewhere, and seriously, you'll love it. So we do Sunday runs here, and I should 8
o'clock
also,
every 8 Sunday.
O'clock every Sunday. So check out the website for details. And but exciting news with Tempo Fit, we're opening up in Dunedin, and we've got registrations rolling in. So really cool. So August the 1st, that all kicks off. So there'll be Sunday runs down there, and also Sunday runs in Wellington, running at the moment as well. So jump on the website and check out where they are. So tempofit.org.
And look, you're slightly embarrassed to do the shameless plug, but I'm not. So, and the thing that I really like about them is the pacing. So any Sunday that you come along, there's groups from 5 minute Ks all the way through to 7 minute Ks. So five and a half, six, six and a half, and seven. So you can choose what pace you want to run at. Bit of a safety and numbers factor, and then I don't know how they do it in Wellie and Otago, but here in Auckland, Hayden sets up courses that rotate around the city, and so basically you get a chance to see all the best bits
of Auckland, hunt out the most scenic spots,
and grab a nice cup of coffee with some stinky but very friendly people afterwards.
And aside from Tempo Fit, I mean, there's so many running clubs around the country who do the same stuff. And also run groups from shops, and so connect with people. It makes those Sunday runs so much more enjoyable.
And if you want to be good, like I and I hate using myself as an example because I wasn't good, but the thing that made me as good as I got was who I did my Sunday runs with. And I was lucky enough to have a crew, and we did the Sunday runs every Sunday, and we had a lot of fun, and it made running fun, and it made it automatic. Like, it wasn't an option to be lazy and stay in bed and watch what was on Sunday, what now, I don't know. You know, so find a crew to run with and lock it in. Just make it part of your routine, part of your week.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, it's the best thing about running to me, long runs. I'm getting a bit
emotional.
Yeah, no, I love it. Not that I've been on many long runs lately, but anyway.
I love it.
All good.
Cool. Well, thank you everyone for joining the show again. It's been a little bit longer than planned, but
yep. a bit of rambling.
Yeah.
Before we go quickly, do you have any idea what's on the show next week?
Well, we did promise Mel Law this week.
Yep.
I'm interviewing him on Wednesday, so that was never going to happen.
Yeah.
So I kind of got the dates wrong with that. So he'll be on the show next week, fingers crossed.
Mel Law, great interview. That's really good.
And hunting down some more of our Olympic team, whether they're on next week or the following.
Some Rio-bound athletes. So yeah, very exciting.
Yeah. Yep. Awesome. So jump on Facebook and search for Tempo Fit. Join us on there, tempofit.org. Flick us an email, krs@tempofit.org. And we will see you next week.
Happy running.